Hello and welcome to This Week in Oklahoma Politics. I'm your host, KOSU's Michael Cross, along with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Earlier this week, an Oklahoma County District judge ruled that Governor Fallon was able to withhold certain emails dealing with her decision on health care exchanges and Medicaid expansion. Ryan, the ACLU was involved in this lawsuit. What were your thoughts on this decision?
We respectfully disagree with the district court's ruling on several of the legal findings that the judge held, particularly that a deliberative process privilege exists under Oklahoma law. We think that it's very clear that it does not. But at the end of the day, I think that there are a couple of points that deserve being made. One, we knew that this was going to be a long process, that it was very unlikely that there was going to be ultimate resolution at the district court level. And two, the governor went in asserting three privileges: executive privilege, attorney-client privilege, and this deliberative process privilege. We don't think that there's a basis for any of those in this case, but at the end of the day, this opinion, this order, narrows that issue down to one: the deliberative process privilege, and the ability of the governor to unilaterally assert that over these documents seems to be compromised, because now she has to turn over a log to the judge, and there's going to be an independent set of eyes looking at some of these documents.
Neva, what were your thoughts on this?
Well, I think both sides had to say that it was just the first step in a longer process, and basically there was a little give and take, and no big winners, no big losers yet. And I think Ryan's right; it's part of a long legal process. And I think it did point out the fact that the governor indicated that she certainly welcomes the chance to resolve the issue in the courts, and ultimately I think it will provide some clarity, and it'll provide provisions and limits, what those really are in the Open Records Act, because right now they've been called into question. And I think the other thing is it'll kind of set the stage for her folks down the road to be able to know what they can and can't do with respect to open records.
That is the purpose. Are you expecting to go all the way to the Supreme Court on this one, Ryan?
Yeah, I think that we, our client and our counsel in this case, the ACLU's counsel in this case, we've anticipated this going to the Supreme Court all along. So, this is an important step in the process, but it's certainly not.
Interesting too that they've released, the governor's office, I believe, has released something like over 100,000 pages already. I mean, we're talking, when you start talking open records, it is a very involved process that can be unlimited in terms of its scope and nature. And I think there does need to be some clarity when these kind of issues get raised, so that it doesn't become a long, protracted question mark on the part of everyone involved.
Right. I also have to ask, the laws were written in the mid-80s. There was no such thing as email. There was no such thing as Twitter, Facebook, any of that stuff.
Right.
Do you think it's important now that the state Supreme Court take up the issues of electronic mail in making any kind of cases with the Open Records Act?
Well, the current Open Records Act that we have in Oklahoma, which is very broad and very powerful, and I think empowers Oklahomans to a great degree to hold their government accountable, that in and of itself was a result of some litigation. And so I think that if the Supreme Court ultimately finds in our client's favor in this case that a privilege does not exist, the legislature could come back and create that the very next year if they wanted to. These are statutory grants of authority, and we just don't believe that those exist in statute right now.
Well, and I think it's interesting. 2 years ago, when the governor's office released the documents that were being requested, I believe, there were 51,000 pages that were given to folks to look at. Out of that, what we're talking about is 31 documents, about 100 pages, that are in question, that the governor's office is saying they have some, they have some legitimate reason to withhold. And I think that is that's going to be the real threshold: is there that reason, and will the court substantiate it?
And to be clear, I wouldn't encourage the legislature to come back and create a statutory privilege. I think that's the case.
So let's turn our attention to the primary election, which is coming up on Tuesday. Probably the most watched will be the state superintendent race. The Republican ticket includes incumbent Janet Barisi against Joy Hoffmeister and Brian Kelly. Neva, I know you currently represent Barisi, but what are your thoughts on the race?
Well, I think everyone expected it to be the race that would get a lot of attention, certainly on the Republican side. Having an incumbent office holder with a very very hard-charging challenger that is certainly trying to build a contrast, I think it's no surprise that this race has kind of evolved as it has, with a pretty lively give and take. I think the other thing is It will be interesting to see with the third person in the race, Brian Kelly, how that impacts the race. You never know when you have three or more people on a ballot whether or not that's going to cause a runoff. I mean, some people say, you know, Brian Kelly has basically had no funding and no real visibility in the election, but he's still a name on the ballot, so it's you can't discount that.
Well, if you've got voters turned off by the negative tone of the two other campaigns, right, they might be seeking a third option. Yeah. I think that if you look, Jenna Barisi is really in the political fight of her life. She's an embattled incumbent. She's made enemies at every turn. It seems like throughout the tenure of being the state superintendent, and even in a political environment where she's had the deck in her favor, she has a GOP-controlled legislature. She has a Republican partner in Governor Fallon. She's not really, I think, capitalized on that with any legitimate victories that she has to show for all these battle scars that she's got. So I think that she's got a tough road ahead of her. If Joy Hoffmeister ends up in a runoff with her, I think that Hoffmeister can consider that a victory.
Well,
just to get into
the
runoff.
And I think the interesting thing about kind of what's come to light in the closing stretch here is the fact that there is an IE, an independent expenditure group, that appears to be a pro Hoffmeister group that is infusing a couple of $100,000 into the media here at the end. And so again, it's kind of like the U.S. Senate race. We're seeing that factored in. And you know, as you say, Ryan, it does that turn voters off, or does that give them some clarity on some of the questions they have? It'll be when the dust settles. I think that's the only time we'll know that.
On the Democratic side, we have four vying for the nomination: Jack Herron, John Cox, Ivan Holmes, and Frieda Deskin. Now, we don't hear much about them, but Ryan, do any of these candidates stand out for you?
I think Frieda Deskin is she's certainly the front runner in this race, but you're right, all the oxygen's been sucked out of the room by the GOP primary. I think that it's likely that Deskin will make a runoff, if not win outright, but I think it's more likely that she ends up in a runoff, and it's just a question of who she's matched up against. And I think ultimately she will be the Democratic nominee going up against either Barisi or Hoffmeister.
Neva, had you had a chance to look at any of those candidates?
Well, it is interesting. I mean, if you just take the campaign expenditure reports, certainly Deskin and John Cox are the two that have led in fundraising. Jack Herron and Ivan Holmes have kind of their own small constituencies, having been involved in school efforts as well as in partisan politics. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very clustered. I think you have to say that Frieda Deskin at this point being the only one I believe that is on the media in a paid fashion commercials would probably give her a slight advantage over the field, but anything can happen in that one.
Now, the Republican primary to replace U.S. Senator Tom Coburn includes seven people, but Neva, isn't it really just down to two, Congressman James Lankford, who you also represent, and former Speaker T.W. Shannon?
Well, I think that is probably the consensus opinion at this point. I mean, Randy
Brogdon might even think that.
Well,
at this point.
I think the fact that Randy has not been able to crack double digits in any poll since the beginning, and is somewhere 6, 7, 8 points on most of the recent polls that have been published out there, you would have to say, will he and the others on the ballot, you know, do they contribute to the runoff factor? And certainly they do. But beyond that, it doesn't position him to be a contender.
I don't think there's going to be a chance he's going to get into like first.
I don't think so.
I think that's right. I think that it's likely that this ends up in a runoff. Neither candidate, even though Lankford has had a spending advantage and a fundraising advantage over Shannon, I don't think either candidate has found a real issue that's allowed them to break away from their opponent. But I think that the wild card here is what does Brogdon get? Now, he's not been doing anything, apparently, according to some of the reports that I've been reading. He hasn't been knocking doors. He hasn't had his volunteers out the way he did whenever he ran for governor. So if Brogdon doesn't draw a lot from either Shannon or Lankford, there's a path to primary victory without a runoff for Lankford or Shannon. In that case, my money would be on Lankford.
Now, since Lankford's trying for the Senate, six Republicans and three Democrats are wanting to get his seat in the U.S. House. Ryan, the Democrats have Tom Guild, Al McCaffrey, and Leona Leonard. Who do you think has the best chance on Tuesday?
Yeah, I think Al McCaffrey brings a natural constituency with his state Senate district, with his former service in the Oklahoma House of Representatives, a retired police officer, veteran. He certainly has a fundraising advantage, an organization advantage. It's hard to see him at least not making a runoff, if not winning outright. That said, Tom Guild has been campaigning for office for the last several cycles. I mean, I doubt that there's a door in the 5th District that he hasn't knocked on and asked for that person's vote. And so if Al McCaffrey and his team are discounting Tom Guild as a contender in this, that would be a real mistake. I don't think that they are, but if this does end up in a runoff, it'll be Guild and McCaffrey. That'd be somewhat of a surprise, though.
Neva, are there any Democrats that you're looking at in this one?
Well, I would agree. I think don't discount a guy that's been on the ballot, the guy that's worked that hard in the district. So Tom Guild certainly is competitive, but Al McCaffrey has a lot of things that put him in the advantage column if he can execute and make those work to his benefit.
Now, on the Republican side, Neva, the ticket will quite likely go to a runoff. You've got candidates Steve Russell, Mike Turner, Harvey Lee Sparks, Shane Jett, Patrice Douglas, and Clark Jolly. Which two do you believe will face off in August?
Well, I don't know that I would narrow it down yet to two. I think the general, there's kind of a general prevailing consensus that four of them are kind of clustered, and any two could break out in a moment's notice. I think Clark Jolly, Patrice Douglas certainly have been visible kind of across the board, as well as Mike Turner, who has been the one with the spending advantage. And then Steve Russell appears to be the guy that is getting a lot of traction with a grassroots movement. I think it's fascinating. Steve Russell's a guy that he's the only guy in the race that can't vote for himself on Tuesday because he actually lives in the 4th District. And so I've been a little surprised that there hasn't been more a little more chatter on that point. But he clearly is ramping up a ground game. I think Turner is probably, if anyone, based upon the level of activity, money spent, energy in his race, he is probably the one that is best positioned to get one of those two spots, and then I think it's anybody's game to get the second one.
Ryan, your thoughts?
I agree. At this point, it's all about name ID. You've got a of course, all these candidates, when they put their head on the pillow at night, like to think that everyone in the district knows who they are because they've been out there, and I think part of that is ego. It's the ego that puts you on the ballot, right, in the first place, but you're out there knocking doors, you're spending money, you're up on TV, you've got mailers out there. But in reality, a lot of the voters, the people that are going to show up on Tuesday, have no clue who these people are. Mm-hmm. And so it's really about generating name ID. You've seen a lot of non-substantive ads. Everybody's pro-life. Everybody's going to repeal Obamacare. I'd like to ask them how they're going to do that when folks that are smarter than them and more experienced have tried over 50 times and they haven't accomplished it. But, you know, so I think that it's about getting that name out there. Turner has done that really well. Douglas has done that really well. Steve Russell has a compelling story. Shane Jett has a constituency in Pottawatomie and Seminole County. So if there's a divide in Oklahoma County, Jett could sneak into that runoff.
And I think that's true. You've got Clark Jolly with a strong constituency in the Edmond area. So and Harvey Sparks, while he doesn't so much have a constituency based on kind of the partisan politics side, he does have a church network that he seems to be working very well. And so. You know, I think what is fascinating is this sets up for an interesting runoff, because where do these folks move once the final, you know, the final votes are in and we know who is in the runoff? The other four candidates legitimately have a real reason to be a factor in the runoff election.
And of course, the other thing that matters is turnout. And even you and I have been talking for years, and it almost always comes, the smaller the race is, it comes down to turnout.
Well, and I think it's also the more crowded the field, oftentimes what you have are voters who decide, I'm going to wait till they decide who the two are. And so you do get somewhat of a suppression factor in that if they can't make a clear decision, oftentimes they will leave that ballot blank.
That might not be as much a case now, since you've got two hyper-organized campaigns for U.S. Senate that are going to do everything they can to bring their folks out to the polls. So, you know, Lankford, Oklahoma County turnout, if Lankford's going to win without a runoff, Oklahoma County's got to show up big time.
Well, let's don't forget, a lot of other folks are on the ballot. The governor's on the ballot.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, there is activity. There is activity from a lot of different, not only on the statewide side, but these legislative races. Some of those races are very competitive, where you have open seats and you have multi-way primaries going on.
The insurance commissioner and the labor commissioner, I believe, both.
And lieutenant governor.
That's right. All have primaries.
And they're all running the same campaigns. They're all running on these generic issues. I think that it's one of the things that surprised me in this crowded primary is that None of the candidates up and down the field have really done anything to try to distinguish themselves on particular issues like privacy or national security and or government surveillance. You know, some issues that might appeal to a niche base
may speak less to the candidate, more to the voter. I mean, what the voters want is they want to hear where you are on those issues. Mm-hmm. And to be silent on those issues makes you suspect. So everyone seems to be saying the same thing and kind of singing out of the same hymn book, but there's a reason. The voters are looking for that information very clearly.
That can be used against you once you finally make it in. But we've got the primary. It's coming up this Tuesday. We've already got the polls are going to be open in your Oklahoma County. You can vote absentee. So get out there and vote. Make sure that you make your voice heard. Thank you very much. Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.